Hello and welcome to a new short series of podcasts from Seven Church Bristol called The Desert Trials, an intriguing title which we've given to describe a story which happens in the Gospels. My name is Bern Leckie, joined by Owen Lynch.
Hello.
And we're going to be looking at this story in this little introduction podcast at the beginning of Lent, so we get an idea of what it is and why it's important and what it's about. And we'll talk now about kind of setting the scene to try and get us into this story so we can feel like we're there with Jesus in the desert. And it's happening in this gospel story just after Jesus has been baptized, actually, and there's this scene where the Holy Spirit sort of descends on Jesus. It's all incredibly impressive, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, mind-blowing.
What comes to mind for you when you remember that part of the gospel story?
There's a sense that this presence of God is symbolized by a dove, which, you know, doves for me symbolize peace. This peaceful dove is resting on Jesus and demonstrating the peace of God that comes in him. And I don't know if he was feeling peaceful at that time or whether even the crowd around him were feeling peaceful, but that's certainly my feeling about it. What about yours?
Yeah, I think a sort of a oneness with God, this sort of stamp of approval where God says, you know, this is my son. And everyone knows then that who's watching anyway, that Jesus and God are doing something. They don't quite get what it is. They don't know what it is. They don't know what's going to happen next. This is right near the beginning of the gospel story. But I'll just read a bit from Mark's gospel because it's the shortest version. So Jesus was baptized by John in the Jordan. Just as Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open, the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." Well, this is brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, great. So is that what? Job done? Well, at once, the next verse, at once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness. And he was in the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals and the angels attended him. That's all Mark has to say about this whole thing. So we're done. But Matthew and Luke add a few more details. They go into three things that Satan, or the devil, says to Jesus. They involve bread, they involve the temple, and they involve the world. And each of those accounts also includes three things that Jesus says back. Now, what we're going to do in this podcast series is we're going to look at one of those things. One of the things that someone says every week for 6 weeks, we're going to spread it out. The Gospels say this conversation sort of happened at the end of the 40 days when Jesus was really hungry. But we're going to spread it out a bit so we can spend all this time in the desert with Jesus through Lent as we're getting ready for Easter. Just before we start, I want to try and get into the minds of the people who heard this first and think about what did it mean to them? What do you think it meant, Owen, that Jesus was going to go off into the wilderness, into the desert? What did that mean?
Do you know what, Ben? I've actually been to this area. I've actually physically been to it. It's the area where Jesus is thought to have been baptized is in the Jordan River, of course. And actually, the Jordan River, it's not very big, actually. It's about 10 metres across, maybe 20 metres across. And then up west of the valley is this kind of wilderness area, this kind of hill country, really rough terrain, really difficult to kind of walk through. You wouldn't want to, you know, go for a hike there easily because it's not easy to get through. Lots of crevasses and sort of gorges and gullies and stuff like that. And so I'm guessing that the people that would have heard this story would have known that place, and actually it wasn't a place necessarily that a lot of people went to. They were thought to have been bandits and robbers and people like that. So they would have known that Jesus was going off into that word, the wilderness, kind of really rings home. And I think that for them there must have been some sense of trepidation. Wow, Jesus really did kind of that. The first thing Jesus does after getting baptized is go off into the wilderness and risk his life in this bandit country, in this, where if he's not eaten by wild animals or fallen to his death in a gorge or been robbed or killed by bandits, then he's done quite well. So I think, first of all, that would have been quite a strange, that would have been quite a difficult thing for them to get their heads around. Like, wow, what's Jesus doing in this wilderness area?
Right, yeah. When I think someone's going off on a retreat for 40 days, it makes me think they're going somewhere nice and restful.
Yes. Know,
Jesus he's taking his sunglasses, he's going to do a bit of lounging, work on his tan.
Yeah, right. That's what I would do.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So this wasn't that.
No.
The desert, to anyone who was in civilization at the time, meant the opposite of civilization.
Like, yeah.
You build your civilization, or you have this desert where everything just doesn't work. It's difficult. It's desolate. It's also spiritually like the front line of a battle. There's some stuff that we can get about that from the Bible as we have it, because we know that when people were sent away, when they were cast out into the wilderness, the desert was the place they were cast out into. We know these stories. We might think of these stories of what Jewish people did with scapegoats, and they loaded up the people's sin onto a scapegoat who then ran off into the desert. So the desert would be the place where all your badness just sort of accumulated. It just, because it wasn't the stuff where nice things grew. It wasn't the things place where life was happening. What we don't quite get from the Bible, but I think it's quite interesting to bear in mind as well, is there was all this sort of spiritual, what some scholars call kind of spiritual fan fiction being written, stories being written that gave meaning to things like the desert and to Satan and to demons, and all these sort of things were being, there were loads of stories that weren't included in the Bible because they're not really very biblical, but they probably were front of mind for the people who were reading these. So there's this thing called the Book of Enoch that describes the desert as like a spiritual prison, the place where these spiritual beings that came and tempted people to stop relying on God, they were imprisoned in the desert. So the desert was like their stronghold. So the people who were hearing this for the first time, when they heard that Jesus was off to the desert, they weren't thinking of about, he was going on a peaceful retreat. They thought he was going off into the front line of a spiritual battle, the stronghold of God's enemies, which are really people's enemies as well in this story about how Jesus is coming to save people and bring people back into good relationship with God. Does that make sense?
I think it does. Yeah, absolutely. And certainly it kind of chimes with the ancient fears that societies had at that time, not just of the desert, but also the ocean as well. You know, the ocean was a place of terror and chaos and often death, out of the control of ordinary people. And I think the desert is, it's that place where people, all their fears are manifest almost. All their anxieties are brought to the fore. So, yeah. The other thing is, you know what? I didn't say earlier on, but there's not a lot of water there. I don't know if you've ever been to the Dead Sea, but the Dead Sea is the lowest body of water on Earth. And actually, it's so salty because there's very little water. The only river that flows into it is the River Jordan from the Sea of Tiberias in the north. And then nothing flows out. So it's just getting saltier and saltier and saltier because it's evaporating. And that hill country is just to the west of that. There was no water. It was hot in the heat of summer. It was probably the heat of summer. Would have been 40 degrees, would have been physically and spiritually lethal, really. Absolutely lethal.
Yes. And even if you did drink that salty water, it wouldn't do you any good, would it?
No, not at all. No, absolutely. It tastes, yeah.
So Jesus is going into this really, really difficult place. And we're going to spend this next few weeks as we get ready for Easter, inviting you to spend time with us, with Jesus, in this desert. And it's not just so that we can do something difficult. There were specific things that the first readers of these Gospels would have expected from Jesus. I think it's worth just talking about that for a little bit as well. Matthew's Gospel is addressed to a Jewish audience. He introduces Jesus in a very Jewish way with a Jewish looking family tree. And who's coming to mind when Matthew says to Jewish people about some guy is going off for 40 days into the wilderness? They're going to think about Moses. There's Moses. What did Moses do? He went up onto the mountain, Mount Sinai, for 40 days and 40 nights before God gave him the laws, the Ten Commandments and the other laws, all those hundreds and hundreds of other laws to bring down to people, that that was going to be their guidance from God. That was kind of who they were as a nation, right? So for some reason, there was that 40 days before then, and Jesus is going off for 40 days. So all the Jewish people are going, ooh, is Jesus going to be the next Moses? Ooh. What about Luke in his gospel? Did you notice that in Luke's gospel, if you just flick to the pages before, there's another family tree, but it's a different family tree. It's a family tree that links Jesus not just to the Jewish family, but goes all the way back to Adam. Luke is writing a story for everybody, not just Jewish people. And Adam is kind of known in the Hebrew story to be everybody's great 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 granddad, right? So we're all related to Adam, and all of humanity's coming out of Adam. But what was the story of Adam? Pop quiz. Owen, what did Adam do wrong? Where did it all go wrong with Adam?
There, you take me right back to Sunday school there, Bern.
Adam and Eve.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Adam and Eve are pictured in this beautiful garden, living in the presence of God, living in communion with God. And of course, one day they discover the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And that even though Yahweh, God, tells them not to eat from it, I think they do, don't they? And there's a story of temptation in there, isn't there, with a serpent tempting Eve, and then Eve,
yes,
telling Adam to eat the fruit as well. So yeah, similar sorts of story, right?
Isn't it interesting? Yes, it's a similar sort of story. So you've got this story of the beginning of humanity and this beginning of the split, really, between where people could have been very, very close to God and where people ended up being separated from God and having to deal with evil and all this nonsense. And I think what's happening with the people who are reading Luke's gospel, they've got Adam in mind and they're wondering, is Jesus another Adam? Like, is Luke giving us an idea of what Adam could have done, what he should have done, what he could have won, if he dealt with the temptations a different way? How would it have gone? What would have happened? And what does that mean for us now? If Jesus has another go at this, what's Jesus going to do differently? I think that's a really good question to have in mind as we look at this conversation, these temptations that Jesus is going to face. But just before we do that, just think about 40. What would 40 days mean for us? Like, can you imagine what would happen if you had 40 days out of your regular life? Like, if you said to your boss tomorrow, actually, I'm not going to come in for the next 6 weeks. Is that okay? How different would life be? Would you be thinking, would it give you, first of all, I don't know, would that even be possible? Would that be possible for you, Aaron? Would you be able to take 40 days off if you're after it tomorrow?
No, but I did do a sabbatical three or four years ago, and that was quite interesting. You know, I mean, certainly losing the sense of rhythm to some extent with not having so much work to do, but yeah, it certainly opens up your mind. I think that's probably what it does, is it gives you time to reflect, time to disengage from what you've been doing for such a long time, and have space to think and reflect and pray and meditate and all of that. And I think you come out of it a slightly different person because of that. And I suspect that's kind of what it was like for Jesus as well.
Interesting.
Because, of course, Jesus would have been working up until that point. He was apparently a carpenter, would have worked from a young age. Of course, he wasn't particularly old when he went into the wilderness, but he would have been working for a few years prior to this, I'm sure. And it would have been a real opportunity for him to rethink a sort of transition time for himself, right?
It was, yeah. And this is a very interesting kind of, it's almost like his gap time.
Yes.
Jesus has been anointed. He's been baptized. He's going to go off next and do lots of ministry, all the miracles, all the things that he's famous for. But this is the time. This is the pivot point, if you like. And it's not a rest time, it's a battle.
Hmm.
And is he going to be the next Moses? Is he going to be the next Adam? What's all that going to mean? He's going to be spending time wrestling with stuff. And I wonder if we could maybe spend, even though I can't afford to take 40 days off work right now, but what I could do is spend a bit of time with Jesus in the desert every day. And I'm going to look for this as not a time to be kind of alone, but with Jesus in the desert. Not empty, like you think about like fasting and hunger. Yes, we could fast if we want to, but Jesus, I think, was also full of the Holy Spirit. And we're not resting, we're wrestling with the things that get between us and God. I think Jesus is letting this story unfold, and we're hearing this story so we can see what it means, not to rely on ourselves, but to trust in God to win all of these battles that we might actually start to recognize in our lives too, not because of our own efforts, but because of what Jesus did. Does that sound good? Should we dig into that?
Yeah, and it's a great invitation to you, if you're listening to this, to take some time to actually just do what Bern suggested there and actually think about perhaps just kind of finding a rhythm that works for you over this next 6 weeks. As a church, you know, one of our main reasons for existence is to create space for us to encounter God. And our hope and prayer would be in this time of Lent, you might be able to find some space in your life. Perhaps this podcast might help you with that, and encounter God in a rhythmic way over the next 6 weeks. So yeah, we'd love you to join us in that.
Brilliant. So please join us. We're going to have 6 episodes, one per week, looking at a part of this conversation. And then the next episode, we will start on the first desert trial. We'll see you then.
Great. Bye-bye.